Well, hey, when I was in college, I was dating a girl who one day, she surprised me with some tickets to an Ohio State game, which is just rough timing that I even have to mention that. Back when they knew how to play football and they knew how to win the games that matter back then, the good old days. But anyway, she surprised me with these Buckeyes tickets, and the plan was that I would drive to her house and that we would, with her dad and her sister, we'd all go down to Columbus, and her dad would, like, do some tailgating and stuff, and we would eventually go in and watch the game. And so her dad was cool. All right, I liked him. He was a good guy. He was a little particular about a few things, and the fact that he was one of those guys that I actually respect now. Well, and I did back then, but that I respect. He was one of those guys that had the perfect lawn. You get what I'm saying? All right, that might be some of you guys in here. I mean, he had, like, the lines. They were perfectly straight. All right, they were light and then dark and then light green and then dark green. You get what I'm saying? It's like golf course type stuff. All right, so he had that going on. He also was particular, I think, about his vehicles and the fact that his vehicles were, like, immaculate, okay? Like they were all waxed and clean, and there was not a crumb inside by any means. And so that's the car we were taking down, and he had just I think this car was pretty new, and this car had, like, white leather seats, so it was, like, super clean. It was just super nice. And so we're in there, and we're, like, eating snacks and stuff, which now that I'm looking back, I'm like, I wonder if he was, like, cool with that. I don't know. But as a 19-year-old, you're going, whatever, you know. And so we're heading down there, and we get to the parking lot of the game, and we're getting out, and he's going around and getting all the, like, tailgate stuff. And I get up out of the car, and to my horror, I realized that for the last 2 hours that I had been sitting on a small little Hershey chocolate bar, okay, that was no longer solid and had melted all over the place and all over his white leather seats and all over my butt, okay? And so it was everywhere. And I remember just being in that moment and just being like, this, I don't think you can recover from this, okay? Like, this is going to be terrible. And again, 19-year-old Zach is going, this is the worst day of my life. Like, so embarrassing. I just ruined this dude's car. All right, he's going to be upset. We're going to break up. What if she was the one? I'm going to be alone for the rest of my life, and I'm going to have no friends, okay? Like, that's what I'm thinking as a kid. But it's interesting. We've all experienced maybe something kind of like that, and it was bad. I had to walk around all day at the game with, like, chocolate smeared all over my butt. Not the great look, you know what I mean? And so it just is. And I don't think it came out of his car seat, so that's a bummer too. But it's just interesting. Now, years later, as I think about that moment that was, like, horrific to me in the moment, you know, now that I think about that, I'm like, that's just a blip on the radar of life. You get what I'm saying? All right, like, I actually totally forgot about that until this week. And so if I would have known in that moment what I know today, that everything is going to be all right, all right, her dad wasn't going to hate me. All right, I actually wouldn't be dating her for very long, and because she wasn't the one, and I was actually going to marry Kate, and I'm going to have a family, and I'm going to have a career, and just all this stuff. All right, that life is more than just a moment. Like, if I would have known that, it just would have completely changed how I reacted in that moment. All right, I wouldn't have panicked. All right, I wouldn't have freaked out. All right, I would have probably laughed and apologized a whole bunch more than I did, I guess. I probably. But if you think about it, all right, we can all look back on times in our life where the situations that we had in the past that were just terrible, that we thought was, like, the end of the world. Okay, remember, like, in middle school when you had your first breakup? Remember how terrible that was in the moment? All right, it's just like, oh no, my life is over. How can I go to school on Monday? I don't know what I'm gonna do, like, that type of thing. Okay, but now looking back, you're like, why did that bother me so much? Who cares? What was that dude's name again? All right, like, that type of thing. See, if you could go back on those moments, you'd have a completely different perspective on your problems. And I think that same principle applies today in the fact that whatever bad situation that you are in right now, or maybe you're like me and you look around at the political landscape and the political environment and all the chaos that comes out of that, like, if you knew the outcome, right, and if that outcome was already set in stone, if you knew what it was going to look like in 50 years, wouldn't that change how you live? All right, wouldn't that change your perspective on things? Wouldn't that make all the little inconvenient things that happen in your life and all the little negative and bad things that happen in your life, wouldn't make all those just really not that big of a deal? See, today we're in part 8 of our story on the life of Daniel, who was a man who lived about 2,600 years ago. Daniel lived surrounded by secular culture and during times of political chaos, just like us. And so we've been talking about that, all right, now up to the last eight weeks. And today we're going to wrap this thing up, okay? So I'm just going to tell you straight up, today's going to be a little complicated. Okay, it just is. It's going to be a little bit like class in the fact that it's going to be like a mixture of history and math, okay? Some of you guys like one or the other, or maybe you're like me and you don't like either of them, okay? But it's going to be a mixture of those, and I got to know just straight up, like, are you guys paying attention, all right? Your third service, you've gotten to sleep in, okay? Unlike me, okay? So you guys should be peppy, ready to go. You guys in? Okay, all right, it's going to be complicated. You got to pay attention, otherwise you're going to be lost in some other century, okay? But here's the deal. The book of Daniel is split in really into two parts, and it's actually split right down the middle, all right, first six chapters and the last six chapters. The first part is about Daniel telling us what happened in his life, okay? And so we see that. It starts off, as you know, back when he was like 13, 14 years old, and he gets kidnapped all the way until he's like in his mid-80s, okay? And that's covers that much of his life. Now, the second part of Daniel is where Daniel goes back and he fills in some gaps of his life and he tells us about some weird dreams that he had at different times in his life. And so these are ways that God had communicated to him, and so he kind of just tells us some of this stuff. Now, Mike talked about one of those dreams last week, and today we're going to talk about another. And again, I got to know, before we get rolling, are you ready? Okay, all right. Ready to pay attention? Here we go. All right. The first thing Daniel does in chapter 9 is he sets the context for us. He says, in the first year of Darius. Now, the question is, who is Darius? All right. Who is this guy? Now, let's go back. When Daniel was about 14 years old, right, King Nebuchadnezzar, who was the emperor of the Babylonian Empire, he defeated this tiny Jewish kingdom called Judah. Okay. Judah was the last remaining undefeated section of Israel. And so when Nebuchadnezzar came in, what he ended up doing is one of the first things he did is he kidnapped the best and the brightest young men from Judah, middle schoolers, and guys like Daniel and his friends, and he shipped them off to Babylon, and he kidnapped them to serve him, the king. And so Daniel served King Nebuchadnezzar for decades, and really for the rest of his life, until King Nebuchadnezzar dies. When King Nebuchadnezzar dies, his son takes over. Daniel serves him as well, and then he serves as King Nebuchadnezzar's grandson as well. But eventually, Babylon is defeated by the new kid on the block, all right, the Persian Empire. You might remember this back from, like, I don't know, middle school history. And the Persian Empire comes in, and this king named Darius rises to power. In fact, he is in charge of the old Babylonian Empire within Persia. And so during the administration change, Darius keeps some of the best Babylonian leaders, specifically Daniel, right? Darius keeps Daniel to serve him as king. So you guys with me so far? Okay, so that's what has happened up until now. Now, Daniel has had a high level position within Darius's new administration, which sounds like, oh man, he had it made. Not always easy, okay? At one point, in fact, Darius loved Daniel so much, he thought Daniel was doing such a great job that Darius decides he's going to create a new position, he's going to put Daniel at the top of that, and Daniel's going to basically run the empire for him. Now, Daniel was cool with that, but as you can imagine, all the other office workers, the kind of word leaks out in the office, they're like, hey, Daniel's going to become the boss, and they don't really like that because they would love that promotion, and so they actually, through a series of events, if you remember, they actually have Daniel thrown into a lion's den, okay? And at this point, Daniel's like in his mid-80s, so that's not very cool, but they do it anyway. But God ends up saving Daniel. We talked about that 2 weeks ago. Now, here's where I'm going with this. The dream that we're going to be talking about today, it happens during the same year as Daniel in the lion's den, okay? This may have happened right before Daniel getting thrown into the lion's den. It may have happened right after Daniel gets thrown into the lion's den, but it happens within a matter of months around that time. Same king. Daniel's trying to set the context for when this is all happening. He's so detailed. And so Daniel says, in the first year of King Darius's reign, I, Daniel, understood from the books, according to the word of the Lord, to the prophet Jeremiah. This is the same Jeremiah. Actually, it's the same writings that we have in our current Bible. We call it the book of Jeremiah. He says that the number of years for the desolation of Jerusalem would be 70. Okay. So if you're unfamiliar with this, actually, let's go real quick. Let's go way back. All right, let's go all the way back to the book of Genesis. What we see is that when God creates man, humanity ends up turning their back on God. And what God ends up doing to save us, because we are all sin and we all rebel against him, is he went and he picked one man. All right, it's this guy named Abraham. And he gets Abraham. He says, Abraham, I want you to move and I want you to travel to a land that I'm going to give you. And so Abraham's actually, he starts off here around where Babylon is, coincidentally. And he travels up and around and he travels to where modern day Israel is today, right? This is the Mediterranean Sea. This is Africa. This is Europe. This is Asia, okay? Right in the middle of the three continents. And so what God tells Abraham is he says, hey, this is what I'm going to do, all right? I'm going to give you land, all right? I'm going to give you a family. Your family is going to eventually turn into a nation. And way more important than that, there's going to be a bunch of good that will come upon the whole world because what I do through your family, which for us as Christians, as we look back, we know who that is, right? Jesus, okay? It's a safe answer at church, okay? You were good, all right? That's Jesus, right? Jesus came and he died for mankind. He died for all of us. And so this is really links back to what God was promising Abraham thousands of years ago. And so Abraham goes. And he has a son. His name's Isaac. And Isaac has a son. His name's Jacob. God goes to Jacob. And he actually changes Jacob's name to Israel. And then Jacob/Israel, he has 12 sons. And they eventually wind up in Egypt. And when they're down in Egypt, they grow into a nation. And after about 400 years in Egypt, all right, they leave Egypt and are led by this man named Moses. You guys with me so far? Okay. Now God, when they leave Egypt, God gives Moses this thing that we call the Old Testament law. All right, we still have it in our Bibles today. And basically what the Old Testament law does is a bunch of rules that they were to follow to kind of separate themselves from the rest of the world because the Jewish people were to be different, and it's supposed to show the Jewish people how to live right. And so God's plan in all of this with the Jewish people, to kind of clear this up real quick, is God saying, hey, you guys are to be my PR agents to the world, all right? That's what I want you to be, all right? I'm going to put you right in the center of the known world, and the world will actually see me through watching you, and hopefully they will come to know me and have a relationship with me that they were born and created to have. And so along with that, the promise is, hey, if you guys, to the Jewish people, all right, if you guys live right, I will give you more good than you can ever imagine. All right? You can't even imagine the amount of good that I will give you. And I will be your God, and you're going to be my people, and the world will come to know me through you. But then he says, but if you don't follow me, and if you don't live correctly, and if you are a representative of me, then I'm going to have to correct you. And I'm going to have to take away all the good that I have given you. Now, this deal takes place, all right, right after they leave Egypt. In Israel, they're like, okay, cool. Sounds pretty good to me. All right, we're really interested in that good that you're promising us. And so, yeah, we'll follow you. We'll worship you. And you'll be our God and we'll be your people. That sounds pretty good to us. And if you read through the Old Testament, Israel almost never does what they're supposed to do. Almost never. Right? Israel almost never upholds their end of the deal. And so God is patient with them. And so he sends prophets. Prophets sounds like a super churchy word. I get that. Think of a prophet as just a messenger. That's all it is. All right, well, God would go and he would say to some random guy, all right, normal guy, most of them, okay? And he would say, hey, this is what I want you to do. I want you to tell these people this message. And then the prophet's like, okay, got it. All right, you sure? All right, I'll do it. All right, and then the prophet would go over and say, hey, I just want to let you guys know, God wants me to tell you this, so take it or leave it. All right, that's all the prophet was, just a messenger from God. And so these messengers, all right, gave the Jewish people time and time and time again, warning after warning after warning, saying, hey, you guys aren't holding up your end of the deal. All right, look at these in the Bible. You guys aren't holding this up, all right? And if you continue doing horrible things, and they were doing horrible things. I mean, at times they were burning their children alive as sacrifices to fake gods, okay? Not good. Maybe one of the worst things you could possibly do. And so these prophets are like, if you keep doing things like that, and God's saying, if you keep doing stuff like that, like, I'm going to have to take away all the good that I've given you, and I'm going to kick you out of the land, and I don't want to, but I will. And so generations after generations go by, and prophet after prophet after prophet, and they keep blowing off God. And so God sticks to his word, and he allows this king, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, to come in and defeat them. And King Nebuchadnezzar deports almost all the Jewish people to various places throughout his empire. But here, if you've noticed, right, Nebuchadnezzar's not here anymore. He's gone. There's a new administration in town. It's this guy named Darius. And when this happens, this is just within a few months of Babylon being defeated, right? Daniel is there, and Daniel's thinking to himself, he's like, okay, that's not what I expected. Babylon is all of a sudden gone, right? They're not here anymore. And he's thinking to himself, he's like, man, there is something about this. Like, I'm just not quite sure what is going on here. Like, is this God's plan? Like, it has to be God's plan, I guess. But, like, what did the prophets long ago say about this? Like, did they say anything about it? Or what happens next? When do the Jewish people, like me, man, when do we get to go home? And so Daniel starts reading from Jeremiah. And as he's reading this prophet Jeremiah, and Jeremiah was kind of a contemporary of Daniel's, although Jeremiah would have been long gone at this point, but Jeremiah was an old prophet that Daniel would have remembered back when he was a boy in Judah. And nobody liked him. In fact, they like threw Jeremiah in wells and stuff to try to kill him. Like it was just a terrible thing. He actually got murdered at the end of his life. And so Daniel has some of his works, maybe even for the very first time, and is reading what we call the book of Jeremiah in our Bibles. And this is probably what he reads in Jeremiah chapter 29. He says, "For this is what the Lord says, when 70 years for Babylon are complete, he says, I will attend to you and I will confirm my promise concerning you to restore you to this place." So here's Jeremiah, and here's God through Jeremiah saying, hey, after 70 years, right? I'm gonna restore you to your home. He says, "For I know the plans that I have for you." He says, "I have plans for your well-being, not for disaster. That's not what I want for you. I have plans to give you a future, and I want to give you a hope. And someday, God's saying, you will call to me, and you will come, and you will pray to me, and I will listen to you because I'm always waiting, and you will seek me, and I promise that you will find me when you search for me with all of your heart." He says, "I will be found by you, and I will restore your fortunes and gather you from all the nations and all the different places that I have banished you." He says, "I promise that I will restore you to the place from which I deported you." All right, so here's Daniel. He's reading these very words from the prophet Jeremiah that we still have in our Bibles today. And Daniel might be reading this again for the very first time, and he's reading it. He's like, oh, man. I think we're close. He's like, the deportation for the Jewish people has an end point. The end point is 70 years. Jeremiah wrote it down right here. And Daniel starts working the numbers. He's like, okay, well, it's been about 70 years. All right, I think he's saying, we are so close. And so Daniel responds, and you'd think he'd like throw himself a party, invite all the Jewish people that he could find and like kind of live it up, spike the ball, maybe do a touchdown dance, something like that. All right, but that's not what he does. He says, "So I turned my attention to the Lord God to seek him by prayer and petitions with fasting, sackcloth, and ashes." Daniel doesn't go throw himself a party. What Daniel does is he gets down on his knees and he starts praying. And he stops eating. And he's wearing old, uncomfortable clothes. He spreads ashes around him, all over himself. This is a symbol of extreme sadness back in their culture. And you might be thinking, like, what's he doing? Right, well, why is he acting like this? Like, he just found out that God is saying, hey, 70 years, after 70 years, I am bringing you all home. See, what Daniel knows from reading the Old Testament, not just Jeremiah, is that the idea that the Jews get to go back to the land is not just a time matter, but it's also a heart matter as well. Parents, you totally understand this, okay? You got a kid, that's misbehaving or whatever. They do something or they got a bad attitude. Let's say that. All right, that's the most, you know, yeah, that's what happens. And so you got that going on. What do you do? Okay. Sometimes maybe you might say, hey, I'm putting you in timeout. Okay, so I want you to come over here. I want you to sit in that chair. I don't want you to say a word. And the question that the kid wants to know is, well, how long is this time out? How long do I got to sit here? And so there's a time. There's really two answers to that question, a time matter and a heart matter. All right, the time matter is, well, you're looking at your watch. You're like, I want you to sit here for 30 minutes. Okay, you sit there and you don't say anything and you be bored, okay, for 30 minutes. That's your punishment. But there's also a heart matter to the issue, meaning after 30 minutes, if you go and they still have an attitude, you're going to be like, hey, kid, I'm going to start this clock all over again. I got all day. All right, you're going to sit here for another 30 minutes. All right. See, part of it depends on the heart, not just time. And so as Daniel is reading Jeremiah right here, it says that after 70 years, God is going to bring his people back. And that is almost done. And Daniel's looking around and he's like, but it's not just a time matter. It's also a heart matter, because the rest of the Old Testament says, hey, the Jewish people will go back when they acknowledge their sin and when they finally turn back to God. That's when God's going to bring them back. And so I think that Daniel is realizing that he's a part of this, that he's one of these people. And so he hits the dirt and he prays. He says, Lord, the great and awe-inspiring God who keeps his gracious covenant, okay, that's just a churchy word for deal, okay? That's the deal that he has made with the Jewish people. He says, who keeps his covenant with those who love him and keep his commandments, which this is where things get awkward, right? Because the Jewish people, they haven't loved him and they haven't kept his commandments. And Daniel knows that. And then he says, we have sinned. Notice the words that he uses here. He says, we have sinned. We've done wrong. We've acted wickedly. We've rebelled. We've turned away from your commandments and from your commands and your ordinances. He's saying we are messed up. And Daniel is not only owning his own garbage, but he's also owning the garbage of his people. See, that's not something we really are great at doing. You know what I'm talking about? Okay? Here in our culture, we're very individualistic. And the way we think is, hey, none of this is my fault. We say all the bad stuff happening in this world, we're like, it's not me. I didn't do that. All right? All of this, in fact, we say all of this is just being done to me. All right? See, it's popular in our culture to play the victim and to point the finger and say, it's not my fault, it's their fault. I didn't do anything. But Daniel doesn't do that. What Daniel does is he says, no, man, I'm a part of this. Man, I've messed up too. Part of this is on me. And by the way, not only have the Jewish people done all this, but he says, but we have not listened to your servants, the prophets, right? The messengers that God has sent, who spoke in your name to our kings and our leaders and our ancestors and all the people of the land. By the way, we still have many of the words that God spoke through the prophets today. You realize that? Okay? We realize that? Okay? They're in the big sections of the Bible that you don't read. Okay? So that's where those are. Okay? You can go back and read them anytime. You probably should. But what Daniel's saying here is he's saying, hey, when we got off course, the Jewish people, he's saying, God, you tried to warn us. Like, you told us this would happen over and over and over again, and we completely ignored you. And what he's doing is he's not blaming all of this on the kings and the leaders like we do in our culture. Right, when things go bad in our country and things go bad in our world, what do we do? Well, it's their fault. Right? If only our leaders, if only this person had been elected, or if only this person was in charge, what he is saying, what Daniel's saying here, is he's saying, yeah, it's our king's fault, no doubt about it. Yeah, it's our leader's fault, 100% true. But it's also my family's fault. And it's also on me. This is all of our fault. We're all doing it. We're all messed up. All right, we all got the sin issue within us. He says, all Israel has broken your law and turned away, refusing to obey you, God. He says, and the promised curse that is written in the law of Moses, what the bad stuff, taking away the good from our lives, like which is what you said you would have to do, right? He says, that has actually happened and has been poured out on us because we have sinned, God, against you. Basically, Daniel's praying to God, and he's on his knees. He's kind of crying out. And he's like, God, I get it. You did right. I've read it all. You did everything that you said you were going to do. You followed your end of the deal, that if we were good representatives of you, you would reward us. And if we were bad representatives of you, you would take those rewards away, and you did that. And you did right, and we did wrong. We were the ones that failed. But then Daniel says, but, Lord, hear, God, please forgive us. Please listen and act. Do something. He says, my God, for your own sake, do not delay, because your city and your people, we still bear your name. It's this idea that God's looking down on the Jewish people. And it's like, hey, you're supposed to be my PR agents to the world so that the world may know me. But you did a terrible job. Right? Like, you did a terrible job. So I judge you like I said I would. I had to. It was so embarrassing, some of the things you guys were doing. And Daniel's like, I know. It's totally our fault. But God, you gotta just point one thing out. Your name is still on us. We still bear your name. We still represent you, whether that's good or bad. And so God, please, not because we're good people, because we're not, but for the sake of your name, it's like Daniel saying, will you show the world who you truly are? Will you show the world your compassion? And will you show the world how forgiving you are? And it's almost like Daniel's got nothing. His hands are open. He's like, God, I have no moves to make. I have no angles to work. We are so, so, so guilty. All that I can ask for is that you would have mercy on us. And while Daniel is still speaking, it says, Gabriel, the man who he had seen in the first vision. Now, was Gabriel a man? Too afraid to answer this? Cool? No. Okay. Gabriel was an angel. Mike, I think, talked about him last week. Was that last week? No. Okay. Some other week. All right. Abort. Okay. And so Gabriel was an angel. We've seen him before. But anyway, he's saying that he's trying to describe what Gabriel looked like. And so he describes him as a man because he looks like a man. He says, Gabriel the man just kind of appeared, and he reached me in my extreme weariness about the time of the evening offering. So it's late evening, right? He's doing his thing. He's praying. And then all of a sudden, this angel just kind of shows up in the room that he's in. And he says, he gave me this explanation. He came to me and he just said, Daniel, I've come to give you understanding. All right, this is not supposed to be confusing to you about when you get to go back and all the stuff that kind of happens with that and when the kingdom comes. That's what Daniel's going to be super concerned with. He says, at the beginning of your petitions, meaning right when you started praying, an answer already went out. It's this idea that God, he's like, yeah, it was crazy. Like while we were kind of doing our thing and we're doing whatever we do up in heaven, and then God was like, everybody stop. Did you hear that? Someone's praying. Man, it's about time. It's been about 70 years. All right, hey, I think it's Daniel. Daniel knows. And it's like right in that instant, God's like, Gabe, go. All right, I want you to give him an answer right now. You go, you take care of this. And Gabriel's like, I came as fast as I could. All right, and so he came and he says, I have come to give you the answer from God. He's not leaving you hanging. All right, he wants you to know. He wants you to have understanding, for you are treasured by God. Now, do you think that Daniel always felt treasured by God? Probably not, right? You think he felt treasured by God when he was kidnapped as a middle schooler? I'm not thinking so. You think he felt treasured by God when he was deported? Do you think he felt treasured by God when he was turned into a slave? Daniel, at this point, has had a pretty rough life. And so I think Daniel, you know, I think he looks at Gabriel and he's like, okay, all right, this is weird. Okay, this is cool. Question for you. We've been deported for like 70 years, all right? And I just read this in Jeremiah. Check it out. You can look at it yourself. But God tells us that after 70 years, we get to go home. So my question to you is like, do we get to go home now? Like, is the nightmare over? Is it done? Can we go? Is God going to set up his kingdom where there's going to be no more sin and the Messiah is coming? He's going to reign and he's going to be the king and he's going to be the perfect king. Like, is that all happening now? And Gabriel looks at him and he says, yes, but not the way that you think. He said, God's kingdom is not coming after 70 years that you just wrapped up, but after 70 times 7 years, which is a lot of years. And so this is where I need you to stick with me. You guys still there? Okay, we may have lost a few, but all right, here we go. He says this. angel says, 70 weeks are decreed about your people and your holy city. So here he's talking about the Jewish people and specifically Jerusalem. And he says, I'm going to give you kind of a rundown of 70 weeks. Now, here's the deal with the word weeks. The word weeks in Hebrew, it might even be in our language, I'm not 100% sure. But the word weeks just means seven, okay? So a period of seven periods of time. So when we think of the word weeks, we think of seven periods of time, but specifically in days, right? 7 days? Okay, we're not so sure about that one. That's what I, okay. In the Jewish culture, it could not only be 7 days, it could be 7 months, it could be 7 years, it could be 7 decades, something like that. It just means a period of seven periods of time, all right? So he's saying there's going to be 70 periods of time that are decreed about. And really, the context means everything. And so specifically within this context, what the angel is talking about, he's saying there's going to be 70 seven-year periods of time. So not 7 day periods of time, but 7 year periods of time. Does that make sense? Okay, so it's about to get worse. Here we go. He says, know and understand this, all right? This is not a secret message. I'm going to give you the exact timing of when things are going to go down. He says, from the issuing of the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem, get to that in a second, until an anointed one, all right? The anointed one, what we're going to find out as we can look back is Jesus, the Messiah, the King, okay? He says, in between those two events, all right, there will be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. So seven periods of time and 62 seven periods of time. He says, and it will be rebuilt with a plaza and a moat, but in difficult times. Now, let me just draw this out for you real quick. Okay, so let's do this. So he's saying there's kind of two events that he's pointing out. He's saying, I'm going to give you, He's saying, I'm going to give you 70 weeks, all right, kind of like a timeline. Okay, and then he says, this starts with a decree. And this decree will be made by a Persian king that the Jewish people can go back home and rebuild Jerusalem. Does that make sense? So that's the decree, right? He's saying from that decree, there's going to be another point of time, which is when the anointed one comes, right? Which we know as Jesus, which he came about 2,000 years ago. He says in between these two times, there's going to be 69 of the 70 weeks. All right, so someone do some math for me and tell me what 69 times 7. 400 and... Come on, people. All right, help me out here. Get your calculators out. All right, 483 years. Is that right? Is that right? I got this wrong one service, so I'm a little nervous. All right, 483 years. No, yeah, that's right. Okay. All right, from the time that the decree goes out to the anointed one. Now, it makes it a little confusing in the fact that he splits it out into he divides this into two parts, okay? He says one part is 7 weeks, okay? And so don't get caught up in this, but one part is 62 weeks, which would equal 7 times 7 is 49. 49 years. And then 62 weeks, what's that? 62 times 7? 430, yeah, there you go, 434. Okay, and so that's what he's breaking it down to. It sounds super complicated. I'm sure this doesn't help, and it looks super complicated, but it's really quite easy, okay? 7 weeks is 7 periods of 7 years. Okay, so he's saying by the time the decree is made, you know you have 483 years to the anointed one when the anointed one comes. Now, he breaks it in half. Most scholars believe that this 49 years or this first 7 weeks, that this is actually the amount of time that it takes the Jewish people to rebuild Jerusalem. So at this point, after 49 years, Jerusalem is fully rebuilt, okay? Not that that fully matters. It doesn't really matter, but that's kind of what he's looking at. Now, as we look at this, just kind of jump ahead real quick. Have you noticed that we are missing 1 week? Did you notice that? No? Okay. All right. We're missing 1 week. 69 plus 1 equals? Okay, all right. And so this is a period of 7 years. And then what we're also going to find is that there is space here and that there is a gap. And we are actually living right now in this gap. Does that make sense? Okay, between Jesus and the last week. All right, so what makes this a little difficult, as if this didn't, is that there are at least four different decrees that we know of to rebuild the city of Jerusalem. And so the question is, when does the clock start? When does this decree, when does that start? What decree are we talking about? And there's really two good options here. There's a king, they're both made by the same king. This is a king named King Artaxerxes. All right, he's the king that's going to come after King Darius. And we know that in 458 BC, he issues a decree to this this Jewish priest named Ezra that he needs to go back and rebuild the Jewish temple, okay? And so that happens in 458 BC. We read about this in the book of
Ezra.
Thank you, Pastor Mike, all right? And so if you do the math, 483 years after after the decree in Ezra, what we see is that comes out to about 26 AD, which would have been about the time that Jesus goes public with his ministry. Does that make sense? All right, 483 years later, 69 weeks later. Okay, all right. It could also be another decree that King Artaxerxes did just a few years later, and this decree he issues to this Jewish guy named Nehemiah. We read about that in the book of Nehemiah. Yeah, and that happens in 445 BC. And if you do the math and you crunch the numbers and you look at 483 years later, and this time if you use the Jewish calendar, which is different than our calendar because it's lunar instead of solar, it's just all this stuff, right? It actually comes out to the day of Jesus riding into Jerusalem days before he's killed, which we now know as Palm Sunday, right? Either way, both timelines end with Jesus. And so that's what the angel is trying to get Daniel to understand. So does this make sense? Kind of. Okay. All right. I'll go with, oh, no, it's not working. I don't know what to do about that. Okay. There we go. All right. Let me get rid of all that. Do you remember this past summer in, I think it was July, when we were we did like 36 weeks of Luke? Remember that? Remember we actually talked about that day when Jesus is riding into Jerusalem? Do you remember how all that goes down? He's riding, he's on a donkey. That was a little different, not on like a horse. It was actually a colt of a donkey. It'd be like the president coming in a Prius, okay? And everybody's like, what? Okay, all right. Jesus is different. All right, okay. And so Jesus is riding in, and all of his followers, they start praising him. And they start shouting. They're like, you know, they're singing like Hosanna. They think that he is the Messiah, the one that the Old Testament is promising, the one that Daniel is actually talking about here. And if you remember how that goes, right, the Jewish leaders, they come to Jesus. They're like, yo, Jesus, do you hear what they're saying? Do you hear what they're calling you? Jesus, they think you're the anointed one that Daniel was talking about. You need to get them to shut up, all right? That's kind of messed up. That's almost blasphemous. You remember what Jesus says? Jesus says, if they were to keep quiet, the stones will shout out, all right? The stones will worship me, all right? Total power move right there. And then right after that, Jesus, as he's riding down, he's kind of overlooking the city of Jerusalem, and he actually starts tearing up. And if you remember what he said, he says, oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem. He's like, you don't know what day this is. You are missing it. You aren't recognizing me. Here I am. Not only did I tell you that I was coming, but I told you the exact day maybe of when I was going to be here, and you don't know. You are missing it. He's saying, I can bring peace. If only you accepted me, you guys don't know what's coming, because I know in just a few short days you're going to reject me, and eventually in just a few short years, this city, Jerusalem, will be wiped off the map. And what Jesus is saying is, he says, you missed the day when God visited you. You missed it. Right? And so we see this, even with that, Jesus may have been referring to this very day that Daniel, right? I mean, that's what he was. He was referring to this very time that Daniel is pointing to, that this angel's explaining. Now, back to Daniel, real quick. He says, after those 62 weeks, the anointed one will be cut off. Okay, and so I'm sure Daniel's going, what? The anointed one cut off, and the anointed one will have nothing. He's going, what? That's not supposed to happen. All right, that's not in my timeline. That doesn't make any sense, which now we look back and we see that, oh, yeah, they did cut him off. They killed him. He says, the people then, after these, right after the 69 weeks, He says the people of the coming ruler, all right, that's the Antichrist. Mike talked about him last week. He says not him specifically, but his people, they'll come and then they will destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end will come with a flood, which is exactly what happened just 37 years after Jesus. The Jewish people, they actually rebelled against Rome. And Rome besieges Jerusalem and surrounds them where no one can go in, no one can come out, and it's a huge mess, and they're there for about 5 months, and Jerusalem, the city, runs out of food, and they actually start eating each other. And eyewitnesses say that once the Roman legions broke through the gates and got through the walls of the city, that 1.1 million people died in the city, and Rome burned Jerusalem down to the ground. The exact thing that Daniel wrote about over 500 years before, as he describes what happens right after the 69th week. Now, the question is, what about the last week? All right, we're at 69, there's supposed to be 70. Like, what is going on with that? Let me explain that real quick. All right. He says in the next verse, he, meaning the Antichrist, will make a firm covenant, meaning a treaty, or like a peace deal, with many for 1 week. Okay, now here's the missing week. Okay, we see it right here. We're all good. All right, there it is. But so that's for 7 years. All right. But in the middle of the week, he will put a stop to sacrifice and offering, and the abomination of desolation will be on a wing of the temple until the decreed destruction is poured out on the desolation. And so here we see that here the temple is going to be around whenever this is. It's not here today. And really what the angel is talking about here hasn't happened yet. All right, it's still in our future. He's saying someday there's going to be a world leader that Mike was talking about last week that is going to rise to power, and somehow, some way, this dude, he is going to broker a peace deal in the Middle East, all right, something that the world has never really experienced. And that deal, it may involve the rebuilding of the Jewish temple that we know will be around at the end. We just don't know how it's going to be around, that was torn down back in 70 AD by the Romans, but it will be built again before the end. And so the Jewish people, by the way, they're already ready for this, all right? This is the Temple Mount. They have everything made to go inside the temple. All they're missing is the building, all right? But right now, they're not allowed to build on the Temple Mount because this mosque, the Dome of the Rock, sits right where the temple used to be. And this is actually the most contested 37 acres in the entire world right here. I mean, you can't even turn on the news without hearing about Israel because of the Temple Mount, because of the 37 acres that everybody's fighting over. But someday, somebody will figure it out. And once that world leader figures it out, he's going to sign a 7-year treaty and a 7-year peace deal. But halfway through, Daniel's saying, halfway through the 7 years, halfway through the week, so that's 3.5 years in, he's going to change the rules, and the Antichrist, this world leader, is going to break that treaty, and the next 3.5 years will be horrific. And after that, Jesus comes back, and he establishes his kingdom. Now, none of this has happened yet, meaning there's a large gap between the anointed one who gets cut off, Jesus, and the last week or the last 7 years. And so remember when Jesus dies and appears to his disciples? Remember this? We talked about this past summer too, right? The disciples are like, okay, all right, we think we're going to get some, like, cushy job. It's going to be awesome. We're going to be in the new administration. Jesus, you're about ready to take over. You're going to become king. And they're like, all right, you're going to set up your new kingdom now? And Jesus is like, no, actually, it's not time for that yet. What I want you guys to do is go tell everybody you can about what I did for them, and then they can have a personal relationship with their creator that they're actually created to have. How about that? All right? And that's what they do. Right? Later, Paul, we had people asking Paul, they're like, hey, what's the deal with all this? We see this in Thessalonians in the New Testament. And they're just like, yo, did Jesus already come back? Like, did we miss it? Like, what's going on? I thought this was, like, happening. But Jesus is, like, gone. And Paul's like, no, he didn't come back. Paul says, you'll know when the clock starts ticking again, when you see the Antichrist, when you see this world leader, right? And he starts making treaties and stuff. You know, you got about 7 years because that clock starts ticking again. And after that, that's when the kingdom comes. That's when Jesus comes back, which means we're in this, which is crazy to think about. We're on this timeline right here, right now. And what God is telling us through Daniel is he's telling us the end game. And this is why Christians have hope. This is why we have peace, especially when surrounded by secular culture and political chaos, right? We are to be different. We've been talking about that over the last few weeks. Why? Because we have a different perspective on life. We have a different perspective on the world around us. That's why we don't freak out. That's why we don't worry. That's why we're not anxious about all the terrible stuff that's happening all around us, because we already know how it ends. We know. It should completely change how we react when life doesn't go as planned. It should completely change how we live, right? It should completely change what we do when life doesn't go as planned. All the little inconvenient things and all the little bad things that happen in our life just turn out to be not that big of a deal, because Jesus is coming back and he will set up his kingdom. And it's exactly what Daniel was waiting for 2,600 years ago. It's exactly what his disciples were waiting for when Jesus came back. It's exactly what we are waiting for. See, if you've given your life over to Jesus, which isn't everybody in this room, but if you have, that's our future. It's already set in stone. There's nothing you can do about it. You can't even change it yourself, which means we can get excited. We can't mess this up, and we can encourage each other. See, we're supposed to remind each other, and we're supposed to talk about it. Back in the early church, instead of saying hi, you know, like, what's up, like we do, and high five, what they would do is they would shake each other's hands, and they would say Maranatha. They would say Maranatha, which just meant he's coming back. And that's how they greeted each other. Like, hey, you remember what's going to happen, right? He's coming back. You get that? All right, he's coming back. That was like their battle cry. That's what they constantly reminded each other to do. That's how we are supposed to be. We're supposed to be eagerly awaiting and patiently awaiting him, not worrying about this world, not worrying about politics or culture, but hard at work, reaching as many as we can, because there's an urgency to our mission and our job, because time is short, because he's coming back. He's coming back for us. Something we can put our hope in, something we can find encouragement through, something we can look forward to. He's coming back. Let's pray. God, we thank you for these words, and we thank you for telling us what's going to happen and what that will look like. And God, some of it's just a lot, but we thank you so much for loving us so much to come down and save us so that we can have this opportunity, so that we can live with you. And Lord, we eagerly and patiently await your kingdom, all right, because you are coming, and you're going to make everything right. You're going to fix all of our issues. And God, we can't wait for that. So, Lord, we ask that you would come, and that you come quickly. And God, we thank you so much for loving us when you don't have to, and forgiving us. God, we thank you. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, we'll see.